Affairs to order. The time is 9:06. It's February the 7th, and we do have a quorum for the record present. Our Senators Stevens, Green, Bundy, and myself, McGuire. And we do have four items on the agenda today. And since the good rules chairman from the other body has graced us with his early morning presence, we will go ahead and bump up House Bill number 317 to the top of the list, Compassionate Gift Exemption. And then just for those here on the other bills to know the order, next we'll go to Senate Bill 223, the GO bonds for the crime lab. And then we're going to go to Senate Bill 185, sex offender child kidnapping registration. And then to Senate Bill 77, using union dues for political purposes. And so without further ado, Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for taking this bill up. House Bill 317 just takes the $250 limit off of the aggregate year giving for compassionate reasons. This bill was spurred because of one of the members in the House has a need, and there was a limit to the ability of individual donors to give, and the issue came around a kidney. Now you can't give a kidney. I mean, you can't sell a kidney, but you can give it. But there's the process around it that may cost more than $250. That goes for airfare. That goes for some of the medical procedures. So I don't think it was ever the intention when we passed the last bill under Title 24 to throttle that down. This particular amendment came on the floor to actually conform to the $250 aggregate limit. There are safeguards, though. The first safeguard is that every gift is reported at whatever limit they're given, is given under this compassionate rule, and there is still some oversight by the Legislative Council. So I think with that, I don't think that we'd have people giving compassionate gifts that are extraordinary or wrong. I think this just opens the door for people to give appropriate gifts to those that have need and who are legislators. So that's really the bill, Madam Chair. It just takes the $250 aggregate limit per year off the table.
Okay, and Representative Coghill, I have two questions. The first is compassionate gift defined anywhere in law?
Madam Chair, my excuse for not having the answer right in front of me is because I just came down to see where my bill is scheduled. I left my whole packet in my office.
Okay.
And so I think under this section, the compassionate giving is described by dollar value at this point. And now I'll have to go back and research that, Madam Chair.
Okay. I'm seeing here.
This is in the review from the ethics folks.
Yes. Okay. So compassionate gift, and I'm seeing here Section 26 of the Ethics Act defines compassionate gifts. It doesn't say that it defines it. However, it says it would allow gifts to a legislator or legislative employee to aid or comfort the recipient or a member of the recipient's immediate family because of a catastrophe, tragedy, or health-related emergency.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. So that, I think catches what we're talking about. And the second part of it is I assume that you decided just to take the dollar level out as opposed to raising it because in a case like in Oregon, we don't allow under law the sale of organs, and so there really wouldn't be a way to put a value on that.
That was the primary reason, but I think ancillary to that is the fact that under any catastrophe, we would like to allow some latitude, and with the safeguards that are in both in ethics law and in the reporting mechanisms for giving, I think we're probably well within accountability measures.
Yeah. Okay. Questions from members of the committee? I just want to make one statement, which is this situation reminds us of how difficult it is to find organ and tissue donors in this state. And it just, you know, I always like to think that when something happens to a member, that out of some of that sadness and tragedy can come awareness. And I've had more people share stories in these last 2 weeks, as Richard Foster's story has been covered, just how difficult it is to find a match and how few people are in the system giving.
Madam Chair, because of your push when you were in the House with us, I became a organ donor on the list that you had helped put together. So.
Okay, anyone here in the audience that wishes to testify? Anybody online for House Bill 317? Okay, hearing and seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Brings the bill back before us, Senator Green.
Yeah, I remove House Bill 317 from committee with recommendations and any accompanying
there's attached
measures.
Zero.
Okay, zero fiscal. Thank you.
Okay, any objection to that motion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, House Bill 317 is moved. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Mr. Rules Chairman. Okay, next we will go to Senate Bill number 223, and do we have John Glass here? I saw him.
He's right there.
Mr. Glass.
Yes.
Anything further that you'd like, if you'd like to just come up? You are here to answer questions, as well as Devin Mitchell with the Department of Revenue. When we last had the bill before us, Senator Bundy had offered an amendment, and the discussion in the committee centered around whether or not we would like to mandate that some general fund dollars be put towards it as well. And so that's the subject back before us. I'll leave it with Senator Bundy. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And after information received from Devin and bond counsel, it is clear that this amendment would not be legal to attach the required deposit to issuance of the bonds, which is unfortunate, but because of that, I won't be offering the amendment.
And I'd just like to say on the record as well that I too had considered that idea and would like you to consider as you move forward. I spoke yesterday with Commissioner Monaghan that the idea of some general fund money come back into the discussion up there in the Finance Committee. And I think the reasons that were articulated surround timing and the fact that even if the general obligation bond package passes, that there will be a period of administration and getting up and going, and perhaps, you know, some general fund dollars would allow for the planning and design to continue moving forward, and so that we don't slow the process down, the time value of money.
Madam Chairman, that is correct. At the present time, the money that was allocated by the legislature, I believe in 2006, the $4.8 million, the design and site selection, will probably run out sometime in either late July or mid-August. If we don't have some sort of funds between then, we would not be able to continue with site selection, site preparation, and be ready for groundbreaking in February of 2009.
Senator Green.
Madam Chair, I think it's also important that we leave the Finance Committee the ability to completely rewrite this and put it in there as general fund, if they so choose, if that's so financially feasible way to do as well.
Absolutely. Further thoughts? Senator Bundy?
I have a question for Devin when it's appropriate.
Further questions for Mr. Glass? Okay, thank you, Mr. Glass. Mr. Mitchell? You just want to put your name on the record, even though I've introduced you.
Yes, Devin Mitchell. I'm the state's debt manager.
Okay, Senator Bundy.
Thank you. And as I understand it, the financing mechanism that is being discussed, that the crime lab would be funded by 30-year bonds, tax-exempt bonds, I assume, and that would cost us about 4% interest rate, and this financing would be achieved by putting some money into savings, the long-term savings that would return about 8%. So basically we get a free crime lab. Free lunches are always suspect. My question is, how much money would have to be put in to long-term savings, and how long would it have to stay there for this arbitrage to work so that basically the long-term savings pay for the bonds?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I don't have a number for you, of course. It would involve some calculations. You'd have to make some assumptions about return, how that money was going to be invested. Generally, as you suggest, the portfolios that the state maintains for with long-term horizons, which would include the retirement funds and the permanent fund, have return expectations in that 8% range. And the current market for borrowing, the capital markets, is very favorable. I don't know if you follow at all, but treasuries.
We do.
The 20 and 30 year treasuries have T-notes have only been lower 1% of the time. So 99% of the time, the market is the cost of capital is higher. So you're right on that 4% is a reasonable expectation for a general obligation bond issuance, which is the best credit the state has being offered. If you wanted me to, I could give you, generally, it would be something less.
Ballpark figure.
It would
five.
Be, you would have to set aside something less than the amount that you were going to borrow because of that expectation of higher return on the money that you save. And you would have to save it for, the money you borrow is going to amortize. And so you're going to have serial maturities throughout the, I would expect a 20-year life for this bond issue that you're going to have a diminishing outstanding principal amount. And so if you set money aside, you could actually spin out a portion of the principal each year as well. And so you might start off with a requirement for $95 million, and then that would gradually go down to zero at the same time the bonds matured. So I might be able to put together a little spreadsheet for you that gave you an expectation of what you might need to set aside. But it's not as simple in anything to answer.
Well, and I understand it, but I think you're giving me the feeling, and I don't know if I need more detailed information, that we'd have to set aside $95 million over a period of years, and that set aside could gradually be reduced over 20 years. But initially, you'd have to have $95 million set aside.
Through the chair, that's correct. Or you could set aside an amount that was static for the whole time frame. So you might say, well, if I set aside $75 million for the entire 20-year life of this issuance, then that would be sufficient. I might be a little bit underwater in the short years because I don't have as large a balance, but I'll recoup that in the long years, present value all that back to today, and you'd wind up with cost neutral. So,
thank you.
Yeah, that's helpful because I think those are the kinds of questions that voters will be asking in why you would borrow money when we have a surplus. So, okay, any further conversation on the part of members? Anyone here in the audience to testify on Senate Bill 223 that I've overlooked? Anyone online? Okay, that closes public testimony, brings the bill back before us. Senator Bundy.
Madam Chair, I am going to have to very reluctantly vote against this bill because I'm a strong advocate of a new crime lab. As one who has been involved in passing the legislation that expands our need for DNA capacity. However, there's another way to get there, and that is cash. Deputy Commissioner Glass pointed out that if we do bonds, it'll cost us another $10 million just in the time value of money while we're waiting to get all that financial structure to work. More importantly, I have not and I've heard from a number of people in my district who are apt to vote, and not a single one has said they want to go into debt to bond when we have cash on the table. So my concern is not I don't want the crime lab. My concern is we won't get the crime lab through this mechanism. And that would be very unfortunate. Delay us a year at least until we'd get another bill, $10 million there. So I'm hoping that if this bill doesn't pass, the administration will simply fund out of general funds the crime lab and go ahead and build it. I have little confidence that the, and because we couldn't tie it in legislatively, little confidence that this legislature or future legislatures will put aside $75 to $90 million in a long-term savings account to achieve the arbitrage. And I say this because in 2 or 3 years we're going to be in a deficit. And those people then that are having to balance a budget are going to be looking for lots of creative ways to balance a budget and not cut state spending. And one of the ways they'll do that is, well, the bonds are going to take care of themselves anyway. We'll take that money that was supposedly saved and use it for short-term expenses. So with that, I'm sorry to say that I will be a no vote on this bill.
Well, and on that point, I would say I tend to agree with a lot of the comments that you made. and I would encourage the administration, already have, to consider the general fund mechanism. I think human nature is what it is, and there are times where it makes sense to borrow money, but then you've got to have the discipline to pay it off. And I think the evidence that we still have 350, you know, plus million in outstanding GO debt right now, when we are sitting in a surplus, just shows how human nature is, that we want what we want, and we don't want to take away from those opportunities to build other things, and so we prolong that payment. So I'm going to support the bill. I have agreed to support the bill because I believe in the crime lab, and I think it's critical that the state finally gets a place to house this DNA and this these evidence of these very serious crimes, these murders and other things that have, you know, you just have to go in that crime lab and see it. It's a disaster waiting to happen. And so we need the crime lab, so I'm going to go ahead and support the bill going out today, but I would encourage the dialogue to continue on whether or not it's part of a bond package. Senator Stevens.
If you're ready for a motion.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 223 move out of committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Objection.
Okay, there's an objection. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Senator Prendergast, Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Chair McGuire?
Yes.
3-1.
And so, Senate Bill 223 is on to the Senate Finance Committee. Thank you very much, Mr. Glass, for all your hard work. Okay, next is the matter of Senate Bill 185, Sex Offender Child Kidnapper Registration, and Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 185 is a bill that will require sex offenders to register their email addresses, chat addresses, and other internet identifiers. This will keep Alaska at the forefront of the battle against sexual predators by updating our state sex offender registry list to include those things. Alaska has one of the highest percentages of internet use of any state in the country, and the internet, unfortunately, is becoming an increasingly widespread way for predators to enter our homes in search of children and teenagers who oftentimes think nothing of spending hours talking to strangers at their computers. Someone could have a child or grandchild who's having chat conversations, email conversations with a sexual predator, and there would be absolutely no way under current law of knowing that. Just as these predators have adapted to new technology to seek out their prey, seek out and prey on our children, we too must adapt to a new technology in order to protect our families. This legislation would give law enforcement a new tool to keep track of the activities of convicted sexual predators and to catch and punish them when they break the law, whether it be by seeking out new victims or simply by not complying with the law. This really will put Alaska on the forefront of this battle against sexual predators. There are currently three states that have similar types of legislation: Virginia, Arizona, and Kentucky. Although there are about 17 other states that are currently considering a similar type of legislation. And as written, this bill has the support of the Alaska Department of Public Safety, the Anchorage Police Department, the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, the Alaska Peace Officers Association, and the Surviving Parents Coalition. Just a couple little issues that you're going to hear some more about today. When I had initially drafted this legislation, it was the intent to have these email addresses public so that anyone could go on, because currently home addresses are public. Since we had drafted this, we actually drafted it in a way that it was not public information, that it was information that the Department of Public Safety would have. And since we've drafted it, we've had concerns raised by the Department of Public Safety about having that information public, and I think those concerns are best addressed by them. I'm open to having it public if this committee feels that it should not be public, and it should rather be just something that the department keeps and uses for its own information purposes and investigatory purposes. I'm open to that. The department also has another amendment or two which it will be requesting, and I've sat down with them and we've talked about it. I don't have big problems with what they're requesting. With that, open to any questions.
Okay, thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Appreciate the bill, and I've got another one coming up here soon that's going to add some things that I didn't have in time. Maybe we merge them at some point, but I think this is a great idea. And the only real question that I wanted to know in your research is the practical matter, really, of people getting multiple email addresses and how you thought through that problem when you crafted the bill.
Obviously, you know, that's one of the issues that people raise is, well, how do you combat someone who's got 15 different email addresses? The way the law is written, you'll have to register all 15 email addresses. And how are we going to find out whether people are doing that or not? Well, that it's a difficult chore, but what this bill does is if you're caught, first of all, that you currently it's not a crime. Under this bill, it will be a crime. And also, there are pretty, and I think you'll hear some testimony about it, there's some pretty complex investigatory tactics that the police and the Department of Public Safety use or have available to them to use to catch internet predators. I don't know how much in detail they'll want to go into that, but I think this will assist them in catching sexual predators.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you. And obviously, this is a goal that any parent would want to pursue. I'm just wondering about the mechanism, how it works. You walk in and your preteen has a conversation going that has information that would cause you to be upset. That's available currently. What would the registration do for the parent? Now, is there, will there be some software or something that if this computer communicates with somebody on the registry, it pops up, or?
That's a good question. And I guess there are a couple different ways you can do it. Number one would be to make the information public so that any parent could go on, just like you can go on right now and do an internet search. If a parent has a suspicion that their child is communicating with a sexual predator, they could call the department and ask them, is this email address a sexual email address of a sexual predator? The other is, it's just all about information. I don't think there's a way that you can make it so that something pops up on your computer, but I'll let people who are more expertise in that talk about that. So I guess the question is, do you make it public so that any parent could go on and just type in an email address and find out whether or not that is public, or whether or not someone could type in the name of a person and then have that information pop up? Because currently, if you go on the sexual predator websites, you can type in an area, for instance, and it will show you where every sexual predator lives in every community in Alaska. And so I guess the question is, and that's something that is really up for debate at this point, something that's up for the committee and the body to decide. The way we have it written, it would not pop up at that point. But you could call Department of Public Safety and ask them about a particular address, and they would advise you whether or not that email address belongs to a sexual predator. And I'm sure Department of Public Safety will have more to say about that.
Senator Bundy.
So in a way, even if it's not public, it'll be public, because if you call and ask about a specific one, they will say yes or no.
Well, that's my understanding is the way it's currently crafted is any parent could call Department of Public Safety and find out, is this email address belong to a sexual predator? Okay,
thank you.
Yeah, and the amendment, I think, that is going to be offered to clarify it, it's that tension between wanting parents to have that information to know, so to be able to call, but having it public, I guess the concern is that other sex predators will then have access to other sex predators' email addresses, and there's a whole Department of Public Safety can talk about this, but there's a whole subcultural thing about that.
We don't need internet bathhouses.
Exactly, and so they'll talk about it. So perhaps the middle ground is to say it's kept confidential. However, a parent who saw an email could pick up the phone and call and say, I have a suspicion about this, and be told. Senator Stephen?
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, since my children are fortunately no longer teenagers, I probably haven't paid as much attention to this as I should, but in the second paragraph of your sponsor statement, Senator, I think what you're saying is that this would be a tool so that, and maybe you could explain this further, internet service providers, internet security firms could actually make use of this so that children would not receive the messages. Could you explain that a little? Because that's a little beyond what my experience has been.
And actually, again, Department of Public Safety can talk a little bit more about that. Groups like Facebook and MySpace are now setting parameters so that, and perhaps in the future, I guess the goal of this is so that MySpace could come in with an agreement with Department of Public Safety and then have a listing on MySpace or on Facebook which says, yeah, this person is a sexual predator. And so you would at least have the information out there. And again, it's getting a little bit, the technical aspects of it, I think, are probably best left to Department of Public Safety to explain.
Thank you. I look forward to that. But it sounds like actually you could block information coming into your home computer, which I'll be anxious to hear from the department. Thank you.
Senator Bundy, did you have anything further?
Just on an enforcement point of view, if I understand correctly, you know, hard drives keep information that even we try to erase. And so if sexual predator there was probable cause to examine their computer, then they would have addresses of people they've communicated with still captured in the computer so that for potential prosecution.
I mean the information that people find on people's computers is pretty amazing, and I think there's probably going to be an expert here who will testify about what exactly can pull off and cannot. My understanding is the technology is available for people to pull out emails and who people have communicated with, and certainly find out who what people's email addresses are on their computers.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, Senator Wilikowski. We appreciate you bringing your bill before us. Okay, next, then, we will go to Kathy Monfreda with the Public Safety.
Madam Chairman, my name is Kathy Monfreda. I'm with the Department of Public Safety. My title is Criminal Records and Identification Bureau Chief. I manage the Sex Offender Registry, and I think we can answer a few questions about that have been just being discussed. We are supportive of the bill, but we don't believe that this whole issue of is it public or not public is really crystal clear. That's our one concern. Our position is that these electronic addresses should not be public. They should certainly be available to law enforcement for the reasons you've been discussing. And there is, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Adam Walsh Act and the Sex Offender Registration Notification Act that addresses a lot of these issues. The federal government has set up an office called the SMART Office, which stands for Sex Offender Sentencing, Monitoring, Apprehending, Registering, and Tracking, which is commonly referred to as the SMART Office. Their recommendation is that the Adam Walsh Act requires the states collect electronic addresses. Their position in their proposed guidelines, that should be finalized within the next 6 or 8 weeks, is that they are not published on the public website. They are currently working on developing software which will be available to all of the states to have the public be able to enter it at an email address or electronic identifier. It will query the entire country's database is and return, yes, this is a registered sex offender, or that address is not currently listed as belonging to a sex offender. There's no guarantee that it isn't a sex offender just because it's not there. So that information will be available to the public.
Okay. Does that answer some of the questions further? Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Kathy. I appreciate your comments. But I guess I'm a little unclear. You say you think it should not be public. Can you delineate why you believe that?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, our concern, as well as the SMART Office's concern and the country in general of sex offender registry managers, is that for both the reason of the predators being able to communicate and gather information that they might find on a public safety website is one concern, and the other concern, of course, is vigilantism.
Could you explain the first one a little more clearly?
If the electronic addresses were public and sex offenders are all aware of the public websites, that they could seek out and get the communication addresses of any number of offenders to transmit, you know, send illegal information back and forth. Or the concern is that that would be that the government, in essence, would be giving a means for these offenders to communicate with each other.
Senator Green.
Madam Chairman, on that same thing, haven't we already passed that by the release of information that's available about their residence, their description, their vehicle, all the things? I mean,
Through the chair, the law currently just states addresses. It does, or your address. It doesn't specify whether or not that's a residence address, a mailing address, an employer address, or an electronic address. So we would like to have that clarified as well.
But is not that already public?
I mean, is public currently in the law says address.
Well, I don't see the difference in an address and the other things available. Because, I never look into this, but I've had people say, oh, did you know that so-and-so down the street is on the sexual offenders list, and I recognize the picture? And I mean, to me, that's we've already sort of opened that door and gone in. I don't know how we turn back, because there's certainly the ample opportunity for contact to be made currently if we're furnishing an address. And is there not currently a picture available?
Yes, of course.
The way it was explained to me, Senator Green, I don't disagree, and I've gone back and forth in my mind on this. The way it was explained to me was that their identity is already made known through the registry, and I'm working on a bill that has a couple of other cleanups to that. But so let's just start with that premise. So it's not a matter of us worrying about that being public and how they might feel or anything. But now the question is, in putting an email address, are we actually assisting them in reaching out to other folks in that subculture of offenders? So the likelihood that someone would get your address and drive over and say, let's talk about kitty porn, I don't know, maybe they would. But it's far easier to get on the internet and say, I see, 10 folks here that like to do the same thing I do. Why don't I invite them into my chat rooms and share information?
And that's a bad thing?
They're all
of like mind, they're not reaching out. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But
I know, we can debate it.
I just think we're already past the security, and I think there's ample opportunity for people who are so inclined to certainly be in touch with each other already. And I'm not sure I'm sold on the security. I mean, I was shocked when we first allowed all the information to go out and be public already, and was surprised at how much is available, and thought that's another penalty on to perhaps a served penalty, and regardless of the how distasteful and how much we hate it. But I don't see why we'd suddenly restrict the information.
Okay, well, let's continue the dialogue. Kathy, did you want to add anything further on that point or on any other point? And then I'll go through to the rest of the testimony.
Madam Chair, we would like to reiterate that we agree with you that it's the convenience that concerns us of being able to communicate instantly electronically.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next, we have David Shade with the Department of Public Safety. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm in the same office with Kathy Montreal. This is Dave Shade. I'm the Director of Statewide Services, and I think Kathy has addressed all that that we wanted to communicate from the department.
Okay, so in that case, Kelly Howell, do you want to waive your testimony as well then?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, so then that brings us to Sergeant Ron Tidler with the Anchorage Police Department. Are you there, Sergeant?
I am.
Okay, would you like to go ahead and offer testimony on Senate Bill number 185?
On the behalf of the Alaska ICAC Task Force, we are supportive of it, but with the same concerns that Ms. Monfredo was expressing.
Okay. Did you have any, you can see the committee is debating, struggling with the concept. Any other thoughts you wanted to add as to why, as Senator Green put it, the information is already public? We've already gone through that debate about whether it's an additional penalty or the public has the right to know. We are where we are now. Why excluding the internet email address is important to public safety?
As stated before, ma'am, the ability for these offenders to get together in their own private chat rooms by hooking up through the email addresses, I feel, is a concern. Additionally, the aspect of the public having access to these guys and sending the harassing emails to them anonymously, I believe, will increase on something to this effect if it's out there publicly. From the law enforcement aspect, it's great to know that these guys, what email addresses and internet identities they are using. I believe it will assist in the investigations when we're going through the computers forensically, trying to identify who they are if this stuff is already out there on the information site there.
Senator Green.
Yeah, I have a question that may not be the appropriate people answering, but I was curious about what is the success rate on generally on registration and correct information being kept up to date on the quarterly or annual or biannual report. And is there anyone that kind of tracks that we have online? I'd be kind of curious.
Kathy could answer that. Kathy?
Madam Chair, could you repeat the question? I couldn't hear what Ms. Senator Green was asking.
Okay, I was curious about under the current standing in law, based on your review of what you have on record with registrations and how effective the offender registration has been, and is it 100%? Do you always find people who've not registered, or is there a mechanism by which you check that?
Senator Green, through the chair, we do maintain statistics of compliance rate. It's approximately 89 to 90% of the offenders are considered compliant. We do also provide lists of non-compliant offenders to statewide law enforcement, who at their as they are able to track them down and determine if they are still where they said they were or have absconded.
But are they supposed to register in any case if they are a sex offender?
I'm not sure what you mean. There are the law that requires offenders to register is very specific about which crimes, types of crimes they commit that they must register for, either annually or quarterly.
Okay, that 10 or 11% who have not registered, what is the mechanism by which you follow up on them and what happens to them?
Senator Green, through the chair, we post on the website if the offender is compliant or not compliant. Monthly, we generate reports that we supply to law enforcement in the local law enforcement in the area where the last known address of the offender was for them to investigate and charge them with the crime if they're out of compliance.
So regardless of whether they have actually filled out the paperwork and registered, you place their name on their registration list, on the offender list?
If we have reason, if we know that they're sex offenders, they've been convicted sex offenders, they will be posted on the website and shown as non-compliant.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if we, Kathy, if I could ask you to sort of flesh this out a little bit, I ask you the why this these email addresses should not be made public, and you gave me two reasons. One, the predators can gather information, in fact, have a chat room based on our information. I understand what you're saying there. The second issue you gave, the reason you gave for not making it public was what you called vigilantism. And the only thing I've heard so far is that one of the officers mentioned that these people may be getting harassing emails, which is interesting because I receive a lot of harassing emails of a political nature. And I'm wondering, so what, you know? So what if a parent sends a harassing email to a known predator? Is that, I guess it's, maybe it's bad, but I know that it's so bad. Is there something I'm missing there? Is there something more to vigilantism that you're talking about other than simply harassing emails?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, it's likely that law enforcement agencies will have an impact when the sex offenders complain and want to file complaints for harassment.
You can file a complaint of harassment on emails? Well, give me your email, please. Thank you. I don't mean to make light of this. It's a very important issue, but I'm not sure that harassing emails is that bad. Thank you.
Through the chair, it is illegal.
Thank you.
I think we're just used to it down here, Kathy. We've got thick skin. Okay. We will next go.
Did she say sending harassing emails is illegal?
She did.
There you are.
Wow. I know.
Now you have to
Would you include
harassment.
That?
I think that was a Bob Lynn bill. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. So on the, is there anyone else here in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Anyone online that I've overlooked? Okay, so that closes public testimony and brings the bill back before us. There are two amendments. Do the members have? Okay, so amendment number one is the matter of it being public or not. I went ahead and offered it as my name. The Department of Public Safety, as you heard, feels that what we would be doing, in fact, is assisting these individuals in connecting with one another and their networks to further sex. Yes, brief at ease. For us, which would remove, it would still require the department collect the email address, mandate that it be collected. However, it would be held confidential and not be on a website. So my understanding is parents could call or anyone could call to ask if it's on there, but it wouldn't be up and available to other sex offenders. So Senator Bundy,
Do you want to someone to move the amendment?
So, yeah, I'll move the amendment.
Okay, and then under discussion?
Yes.
I see another issue, and I am inclined to support the amendment. The additional issue is beyond what has been spoken now. Should the state set up a mechanism that provides an opportunity for illegal harassment? I can see clever attorneys suing the state on behalf of these people. So in addition to the concerns that are expressed so far, I don't think we want to be party to making victims out of, or I guess it's not a victim isn't the proper term, allowing them to work the system to their advantage.
Interesting thoughts, Senator Green.
But would the litigation be against the state?
I'm sorry?
Would the litigation be against the state?
Well, the state is the one that provide the mechanism, so I would guess deep pockets would be put into suit.
Possible.
Not.
I would question that. I don't think the state's the party to this. I think the harasser is the suee.
And suee.
And,
as they would say, at the fair.
Is the one being gone after. I don't think it's the state.
Yeah, you could.
I mean, that's still a good point. Does it just evolve and move into litigation? But
I dealt with a case once where it was just the fact that it was on state land.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That it was a polar bear mauling, and it was, you know, just the fact that it was on state land. So who knows? I think there's always an argument made if there's money that could be moved around.
Well, polar bear is going to have a chat room if you're not careful.
So, Senator Wilikowski, did you want to comment on the amendment? Your thoughts?
My initial intent was to have this public. I hadn't even thought of the idea that this could potentially cause sex offenders to all get together and share child porn, and which is a concern. So obviously people who are a lot smarter than me have looked at this, people in Department of Public Safety, people all across the nation. I guess this is one of the recommendations of the Adam Walsh Act, is to not have it public. But, you know, my initial inclination was, well, why not? Kind of like President Green said, we do it with addresses, so I'm open. But just one other thing I do want to point out about the amendment is on line 8, it talks about resident address, and that is something, if we're looking at the same version here,
mm-hmm.
That's something also that's being requested by the department, and the purpose of that is to not have work email addresses, and I frankly think that's probably a good idea. I don't think we want people harassing employers, small businesses.
Oh, it's instead of an employer address.
Okay. Well, because people will have work emails, and I think my understanding is that change right there will limit it to just people's resident addresses.
Does that refer to their email access at a place of work as well?
I think what this actually does is both. I think this is as far as registering where you, because I think right now it just says you have to register your address, and so just to clear up any confusion, because fast food restaurants, things like that, they may employ sex offenders, and I don't think when you go on a sex offender list, anyone wants their small business or large business showing up on the sex offender list.
Right.
And also email addresses as well. I don't think people want work emails to show up on that, and I think that's appropriate.
Senator Green?
And then I'm sure Judiciary will talk about this, but isn't the activity we're trying to stop already illegal?
No, actually it's not, Madam President. The
pornographic material?
Oh, well, pornographic material is absolutely illegal. Well, if it's child porn, regular porn may not be, unless it's obscene.
Child porn, then.
Child porn is, yeah. This activity is, this bill would prevent, would require sexual predators to register their email addresses. Currently, a sexual predator, a sexual offender, could be communicating with a 14-year-old child, could be having chat conversations every night, be using a fake alias, saying that they're a 14-year-old boy or girl, and currently that's perfectly legal.
Yeah.
As long as there's no enticement.
And I think it's just one other layer. I mean, there will be situations where a sex offender uses an alias, uses an email address, doesn't register it. We even know of cases right now, and that's where we're working another bill, of sex offenders registering to addresses that are not theirs. There's all kinds of things that can happen, but I think what's nice about it is it's just one extra layer, you know, where you can try and get the knowledge of who this individual is out. Senator Bundy and then Green.
It might be useful to remember that enticement of children is not a one-time incident. There's a long courting period that goes on often, and when we were talking about other sexual offender legislation, people hanging around schoolyards and that sort of thing, courting victims as they were over quite a long period of time. So when someone's on the email talking to a 14-year-old, they may not be talking about explicit activities at that point, but it could be a process that leads up to them.
That's right. Senator Green and then Steve.
So one question. So does this make it illegal for a sex offender to communicate with an unknown person out there in the world?
No, it does not do that. All it does is require that they register their email address, and then they can still do it. And I don't know, you really get into First Amendment rights when you go down that road.
Okay, so like you explained, Paula Goldman, I'm sure, then it would take an intervener, a parent or an onlooker, to say, oh, I think I'll call the troopers and find out.
That's right. But if you have a...
How often do we think that's going to happen?
Well, if you have a 14-year-old child, I know a lot of parents take pretty active roles, and parents should take active roles in who their kids are communicating with. If your child's chatting with someone for long hours, you may just want to go in and check the email address or the chat address.
I think it will play out the way it does now in terms of physical location, probably, where mothers sort of look around who the sex offenders are. They share that with other mothers, and so if Sally's playing over at the sex offender house, there's concern, and it's probably a similar thing. Who are you talking to? I mean, I hope I do this, but I would hope I would ask, you know, who are all the individuals that you're talking to, and you're sort of cleared off on a list, no different than you had to be cleared to go play.
Sure.
Back in the day before email, you couldn't play with somebody unless they were approved by your parents. So you hope this will happen, and they can use this as another tool. Call the department and find out if that email's on there. But Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I really like the second paragraph of your sponsor statement, and I think what it says is that if this becomes a tool, there will be internet security firms that could either block children from getting these messages or could warn parents that they're getting that their children are getting messages from someone they shouldn't be getting it from. And my concern is by ripping out this issue of public-private, does that void the advantages that you have listed in your second paragraph?
Boy,
that's
a good question. I don't see why in the future, and I guess this is a first step. This is a first step towards starting to gather this information. But it's not like we're saying this information is private. All we're saying is we're not going to put it on a publicly searchable database. I don't see why under this bill City of Anchorage, Municipality of Anchorage or the Department of Public Safety could have some kind of an arrangement with MySpace or Facebook to just provide them with this information. I don't see why you couldn't do that under this bill. And maybe DPS.
I see this as a disadvantage to say that it cannot be public. I see an advantage in making it public in that this service could be provided. But anyway, that's just
where Senator right Bundy now. And then Green.
I'm getting a little confused now. As I understand it, if this amendment were to pass, the registry is maintained by the Department of Public Safety. As a parent, you could contact them. They would tell you if that email address or not belonged to a sex offender. That's correct.
Well, Senator Bundy, through the chair, I'm not offering this amendment. I just want to be clear on that. And when I read this amendment, the concern that I have about this is it says that this information is confidential and not subject to public disclosure, except as so. I guess I have some of the same questions that, I mean, I think you raise good points, Senator Stevens, Senator Bundy, and maybe law can clarify that. You know, my intent when I proposed this bill was to have something that was public so that parents could go and search it. And, I guess I would just like some clarification myself from law and maybe from DPS that we still will be able to do the things that we want to do. Parents call up and check and share this information with other internet service providers and internet security firms. I guess I would myself like that clarification as well from law. Maybe that would help ease your concerns.
Annie Carpinetti is here with the Department of Law nodding that she'd be willing to come up and explain.
And Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bundy.
An extension of that parent and then a responsible company, a Facebook company who's wanting to be responsible, should then be able to say, okay, in the Anchorage area, we want to know if X, Y, and Z people are on the list, and then we're not going to allow them to use our service.
Yeah. Welcome. Can you put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. My understanding of what the bill does is it clarifies that sex offenders have to provide in their registration information email addresses and other internet identifier information, and it also makes something illegal that hasn't been or hasn't clearly been illegal. If they fail to do that, they can be charged with failure to register because they have not provided the information that the statute clarified by this bill would require them to provide to the department and to the registry. The concern of law enforcement is that, as Senator Bundy said rather graphically, they don't want to create an internet, what term did you use?
Chat room.
Yeah,
okay, anyway.
Bathhouse.
Their concern is that if communication is so easy, because it's up on the DPS website, that you will be encouraging predators to exchange child pornography and make it easier for them to do so. This amendment would provide that information is, I think the intent of the amendment is to provide that electronic information will not be furnished on the website, but that it will be available to law enforcement so that they can work with parents on an individual basis. That's what the intent of it is, and Senator Stevens, through the chair, you point out that it says confidential, and maybe it's not very artfully drafted, and it needs to be clear that the information is available to parents through law enforcement, but it is not just put on the website so that the sexual predators all across the country, not just in Alaska, will be have access to that information. And it's different from a residence address. You put the residence address on the website so people in the neighborhood know, you know, not to let their kid go trick-or-treating at that particular house. But electronic addresses are a little bit different because then it's the whole country that's concerned about sources of child pornography being moved around more easily.
Senator Green.
Yeah. Well, you kind of touched on what I was going to ask for. Is there someplace else in the statute that provides for the description or the qualifications of the person who's requesting the information? It just says assure the anonymity of members of the public who request information under this section. That does not say parents. That does not say law-abiding citizens. This, too, could be the other predator.
Through the chair, I think that's correct, but I think Ms. Monfreda might be able to answer that more adequately than I can, because I think there are regulations, actually, that they have adopted in terms of people asking for information.
We'll do that, and then I think what we'll do is set this aside until Tuesday's meeting so that we can have some time to digest all of the different viewpoints that we've heard and think about whether or not this is crafted as well as it could be. Ms. Monfreda?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you want to go ahead and respond to what Annie was saying?
If I understand what you're saying, it's the availability to the public in some manner. And I agree that it's that term that it's saying it's confidential and there might pose a problem. But I can just repeat that the Smart Office and implementation of the Adam Walsh Act is intending to develop a nationwide access to parents and possibly also to the internet companies to query against a specific address identifier and have a return of yes, that is a sex offender, or no, that offender's not, that address is not listed in the database.
Okay, well, will you take a look at the, do you have a copy of the amendment as drafted?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and if you would just take a look at that here between now and Tuesday, as well, I'll ask Annie to, and Lauren, and certainly the bill's sponsor, to be sure that the bill, or the amendment accomplishes those goals.
Certainly.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and withdraw amendment number one for now and set aside the matter of Senate Bill 185 until next meeting. Okay, so that brings Senator Wilikowski.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just coming up to gather my things.
Okay.
Thank you.
So that brings us next to Senate Bill number 77, Senator Bundy.
Thank you. If I may, I'll just remain here.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Another simple little bill that provides, I think, freedom and an opportunity. Senate Bill 77 would prohibit the unauthorized use of agency fees for political purposes without basically the person who pays the agency fee providing authorization for that to happen. It is not a small issue, actually. I mean, there's kind of a freedom of choice issue in my mind. Information that came across my desk recently, I think in the last 10 years, unions in Alaska have contributed over $4 million to political campaigns. Absolutely, they're right. They certainly should be able to do that. However, just for clarification for the committee, a little explanation of what an agency fee is. When Senator Stevens and I worked at the university, they had a union. The union dues were, I don't know, some $400 or $500 a year, or the agency fee was some $400 or $500 a year. And then, if you wish to be a member of the union dues were an additional $10. So the vast bulk of what you were paying for the operation of the union by an agency fee was the vast bulk of the sum of the funds, with only a small amount actually being the union membership dues. Currently, if a member of NEA is, just for example, who pays agency fee to NEA, a teacher who pays agency fee to NEA, is unhappy with the political activities of NEA, they can, through a little bit of laborious process, petition and receive that portion of their agency fee that was used for political activity. They can receive it back. So this bill is really, in the bottom line, an opt-in or an opt-out. In our busy lives, you know that sometimes we intend to do some things and they slip by. I think it would be a more fair, certainly give people a more conscious choice if we were to require an opt-in provision. So, okay, you plan to do some campaigning, Mr. Union. Tell me what the campaigns are going to be all about, and then I will choose to opt in, or perhaps not. Rather than after the fact, I've had to keep track of for the entire year of what the political activity was, and then decide whether I choose to opt out or not. It is no way limiting, nor should we attempt to limit political speech by unions. It does, however, as I said, provide a little more flexibility, a little more choice for those who pay agency fees as to whether they're going to be part of that political activity. As I said, Madam Chair, a relatively simple bill.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Questions for Senator Bundy? Okay, is there anyone here in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill number 77? Okay, anybody online? Okay, I don't see anyone. Committee discussion. Senator Stevens.
Well, I pretty much agree with everything Senator Bundy has said. I can even see agency fees I've paid being used in opposition to me, and it's happened. And you know, I think many unions seem to have a left-leaning approach and support left candidates, whereas you know, if you're a more conservative person, you probably don't think it's right that your money should be used to support that candidate. So I think it makes perfectly good sense. Give people the opportunity. If they want to opt in, fine. If they want to not be a part of it, fine. I think it makes perfectly good sense to me.
Hey, anything else? Anything further? Okay. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Bundy.
I would move that we move from State Affairs Senate Bill 77.
0.
I'm proud to say no fiscal note.
0 fiscal note. Okay. Any objection to that motion to move out of committee? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill number 77 has moved. And we are adjourned.